Hello?
Hey, Trey.
Josh, hey, what's up, man?
Hey, well, how's it going? Yes, it's Josh, 1-800-BJJ-HELP. You probably saw the number pop up on your phone. No, I'm kidding. Actually, someone asked me what happens if you call that number, and I actually don't know. I should just try it. I should just
Yeah, see
try it.
what
I haven't
happens.
done
You
it
should
yet.
record it if you do
I should make it a new
that.
intro or something. But yeah, welcome to the 1-800-BJJ-HELP podcast. Super excited to have you on. Others may know you as Slime Mold Grappling. Where did you get that name from?
So it's actually part of the whole ecological dynamics thing. Self-organization is a big thing, and so there's actually a type of slime mold that can solve mazes. So you can drop it into a maze and put food on one end, and it will actually explore the maze until it finds food. And it does that through like local interactions of its individual parts and the environment. And then it optimizes the route so it actually leaves residue behind so that it doesn't follow a suboptimal path again. So it kind of plays into the whole self-organization and learning from the environment part of ecological dynamics.
Wow, that is so cool. I had no idea that was the thought behind the name, and it makes a lot of sense. And I'm glad to be fe talking with a fellow nerd.
Oh man, it's so deep.
but for people who don't know you, could you give a quick intro, who you are, what you do, and how you got into jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, so my name's Trey. I'm just outside of Portland, Oregon. I got into jiu-jitsu honestly because I had a kid. So I had a daughter. I have a background with martial arts, you know, karate and the kind of like typical self-defense approach that didn't end up being self-defense. I know a lot of kata. I've never used any of them. and so, you know, when my kid was born, I was like, I need to get into a practical martial art so that once they're old enough and maybe interested, there's a way for them to learn a way to manage themselves in the world effectively, right? Because ideally they'll never need to, but you know, if I can help them learn those skills, I would rather they have the ability should the need arise. And so one day, literally with no preparation at all, like I just got up from my desk at lunch and drove to a gym nearby and took a trial class. Like didn't have any gear, took a loaner gi, had to have the guy tie my belt. Shout out to Justin at Impact in Beaverton, Oregon. He has been amazing. The gym has been great. And so I started there and I was like, man, I love this stuff. Like I was immediately hooked. I did gi exclusively for probably a couple of months. And then I went to one of the no gi classes taught by Justin, actually. And he kind of warned me ahead of time. He was like, hey man, just so you know, we work the whole time we're in class. Like it's gonna be really hard. And I was like, all right, yeah, cool. Showed up, took that class, and I actually don't think I've put a gi back on since.
Whoa. What was it about that class that made you make the switch?
The scrambling, I think, and the work volume. Like I left the first no-gi class just feeling absolutely trashed. Okay. I was so tired and just like drenched in sweat and gross, and it felt great.
That's crazy. And so you said his class was like, it's going to be all work. Does that mean that there was no dead drilling? It was all live work.
So there's a little bit of dead drilling, but almost zero. Like there's a lot of resistance built into things just because it's a lot more, to me anyway, it feels a lot more like a wrestling practice than a typical jiu-jitsu class, right? Like, so even in wrestling, if you're not like going 100%, it's a really athletic endeavor, right? Like even
Right.
just play wrestling is crazy exhausting.
Yeah.
And so it was usually like a little bit of here's this thing and how it works, and mostly just really, really hard work against people that were either resisting, or it would be something like, we're gonna do takedowns from standing. So take your double, and then when you go down, scramble, and then get back to
Right.
your feet. So that kind of stuff. So it's not ecological in a sense, but it's one of those things where it's really close. There's a whole lot of alive time in Justin's no gi classes, and I absolutely love it.
Gotcha. And didn't want to save the punchline for too long and bury the lead, but I wanted the listeners to know that you're a white belt and you currently basically run a, well, how do you want to put it?
I would say that I facilitate a club. I don't necessarily run things. We're pretty democratic. I don't really have like I don't believe in like having control or power or anything like that. So I just kind of I do the nerdy part of things so that other people can just show up and like do the sport essentially.
Yeah, but it's still pretty unheard of for a white belt to, get some mat space, have a friend over, you start training using the ecological approach, and then it grows, it grows. And you said sometimes you have up to 10 people there and you're facilitating this practice. To back up though, I just want to leave that there for a second. We can come back to it. To back up, how did you get into ecological approach or constraint-led approach? I know you're really active in the Discord and it's cool to put a face to a name now, but yeah, how did that
Again,
come up?
it was because of my kid, when they were born, I was like, man, I don't want to mess up this parenting thing. It's a pretty important job. So I started reading a bunch of research and I found Newell stuff, who was kind of like, one of the original, sources of information on this kind of thing. And then that led me just straight into ecological dynamics. Like, how is this kid learning all this stuff without me explicitly teaching them anything? And that just one thing led to another. I started jujitsu a couple of years after our kid was born. And I was like, man, I think there has to be a way to apply this stuff to what I'm doing. And then I started finding like Greg Sauters and Kabir Bath and Eddie Gmelz and all the people out in the world that are already doing this stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, this feels like home.
Whoa. Wow, that's interesting. So you actually got to learning about ecological dynamics before you saw it in the jiu-jitsu context.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, that's so
But
cool.
I get And it just kind of those two things converging, like parenting and submission grappling, like really pushed me super deep into the research really fast.
Whoa. Okay. So you'd be a great person to ask. For people who don't know what ecological dynamics is and constraint-led approach, might sound like flashy buzzwords, but could you describe a little bit of the science? Go as deep as you want, actually. And
Yeah,
then, yeah.
I think I honestly, I usually try to stay not shallow, but relatable. I think one of the big problems that we have in the eco community right now is there's a big emphasis on everyone understanding everything, and I don't think that's necessary. To be completely frank, like we all use cell phones every day. You don't need to know how if you shot crystals correctly, they start to think about numbers. Like it's absurd to think everyone would need that much knowledge. So ecological dynamics is just a way of describing how we currently think based on contemporary research that organisms interact with their environment. So it's an explanation of how we exist in space and how behaviors arise due to the environment that we're in and the constraints that we experience in, kind of day-to-day life.
Yeah. When it comes to one piece of ecological dynamics that I'm struggling to understand is this idea of direct perception. Do you have a, yeah, can you share that a little bit with me and help me understand what do they mean by direct perception? And then how is that different from the information processing theory of how we learn skills?
So historically, we've kind of taken an impoverished view of our environment. So we believe things like you would observe something and then you would have this central processor. Essentially, it's like a computer, right? So we had this idea that people would observe something and then they would process it in their head and then they would be able to interact with it. And the idea is that your brain is kind of enriching the environment and calculating the information that you need to kind of interact with the things around you. And direct perception essentially completely throws that out the window and says that you don't need to do any processing at all. There's enough information in your environment that tells you how you can interact with things and what actions are open, what affordances for action you have, right? So like if I were to meet you in person and go to shake your hand, your brain doesn't need to be like, oh, hey, that's a human hand. It has five fingers. I can grab it with my opposite hand. You just shake my hand, right? And that's kind of the difference between direct and indirect perception. To me
Okay.
anyway, I'm not an expert, totally open to being wrong, but that's my understanding.
Okay, that's helpful. So I guess in the old or the other theory of thinking, information processing, our brain's like a computer. Do they believe that we look at things and then our brain has to like define what it is? Like, this is a ball. Here are the options of things I can do with
Right.
this ball.
Yeah, totally. There's a lot of calculation.
A lot of calculation. Okay. And then in the ecological dynamics world, it seems like there's direct perception means there's a filter that we like perceive the world in ways of how we think we can interact with it. Like, that's like a filter. Like, we just think we can interact with everything and
So
or something like
it's
that.
not necessarily a filter. So in ecological dynamics, I think we would say that there's an attunement to information in your environment. So grappling is a really good example, right? Like if I take someone that has no grappling experience at all, and I tell them to sit behind me and do a rear naked choke, or like to try and choke me, they're not gonna really like. I'm sure they would take a shot at it because choking is a common concept in the world, but they would have no idea what to do, right? Because they're not attuned to the information in the environment. Whereas if I were to take you and put you behind me and say, okay, go for it, you've already practiced this in a live environment with resistance. So you're attuned to the information that's available and you can pick up on that and take action immediately, right? And that's kind of the difference. So one of the arguments is that the information exists and skill is just increasing your attunement to that information and your ability to notice and act on it.
Right. And that's why I think they like to say skill adaptability versus skill acquisition, right?
So it's usually in terms of adaptability, it's that we want to be able to put athletes and learners in new situations and have them be able to apply skills that they've learned in other places, right? So instead of teaching you that to do an arm bar, you have to do it in these 70 perfect linear steps, we would just help you understand hyperextending an arm. And then you would be able to see that opportunity from all over the place, right? Like you don't even need to fall to the side to do an arm bar. You can do an arm bar from mount without ever falling off of your opponent.
Right.
So, but you would never know that if the only arm bar you're ever shown is falling to the side, like is, the stereotypical example.
As you all know by now, I'm a huge fan of journaling for jiu-jitsu and in life. And I've been working on a journaling app called Sherpa. It's designed to give you a few journaling prompts to set an intention, plan, or goal before you go to practice, and then reflect afterwards to help you get the most out of your training and guide your focus. Sherpa uses AI to analyze your entries, gives you summaries and insights over time to show you where you're progressing, and then pinpoint areas of improvement for you to focus on. We're looking for athletes to test out the app on a free trial and give us some feedback to help us shape the future of the app. So if you're interested in joining, you can sign up at the waitlist in the episode description or directly at the website, sherpajournal.ai. That's Sherpa journal.ai. Yeah. And I think a lot of fellow white belts would kind of have this sense that, like, when you do dead drilling at the gym and you practice this arm bar 10 times, then you go straight to open spar. We're like, oh, dang, I can't hit that. I we
No,
just
yeah,
I
no one
think
gets it.
we intuitively know that. And I wonder if eco and constraint led approach resonates really well with white belts because we face that problem so much.
Yeah, well, and it's also one of those things where that's a, in my opinion anyway, I'm gonna say this a lot. It's my opinion. I'm not an expert in either of these fields. I'm just like some guy that's read a bunch and likes to be strangled by my friends. But it's a teaching problem, right? Like if you take 10 people and you teach them that the only way to solve a problem is to do these five steps in this order every time, then every single person in the room is trying to hit those five steps in order every single time. And everyone knows exactly what you have to do to stop that from happening. But in my experience, if you take a class of people and you teach them arm bars in a way that lets them explore the solution and problem on their own and figure out the way that fits their body and the way they're feeling that day and how well they slept. Like there's all these variables, right? And then at the end of class, you'll actually see people hitting these things on one another because they all do it differently. There's
Right.
no one single path to solve that problem.
Yeah, I face that a lot because I'm really tall and skinny. So I'm like almost 6'2", and I'm like 150, 155. And so I have long arms, and guillotines are just so tricky because the way everyone teaches is so different, and my arms are so long. So Yeah, I definitely feel that. When did you start training on your own versus at the gym? Or do you still do a mix of both? What's
I
the
still do a
current
mix of
setup?
both. I don't make it to the gym anywhere near as much as I would like, just because work has been really crazy. But I essentially, trying to do the math here, I made it 2 months in and then had to take some time off for an injury. And that is what essentially bought me the time to spin out the website. Like, that was my way of like staying involved while I couldn't physically do anything, right? And I had essentially a couple of months off to recover from that. And then when I came back, I was like, meh, we're just gonna start doing this thing. I had one single coworker. So our mat space is actually at our job. And I had one coworker who was like, yeah, I'm interested. Let's give it a shot. I was like, all right, here we go. And that's how it started.
Whoa. And did your coworker have any prior experience? None at
Zero.
all. What? Okay. So then you guys show up. He shows up or she shows up. What did you guys do for your first day on the mats? Like, so you were 2 months in and this person was day zero.
Yep.
That's
So
awesome.
essentially, at first, I was really paranoid about doing the wrong thing, which I think a lot of people probably struggle with. Like, first, this other person is trusting me to help them learn a thing, and I don't want to teach them wrong stuff. So all that we did for probably the first month, maybe two, was just games that I got from the internet, essentially. Like, I would research. I came up with this like framework that I wanted to teach, kind of based on the old school positional hierarchy of jujitsu, and then I threw that out the window when I found Greg's kind of three macro situation framework that I really like a lot. So standing, guard, pinning, that's all that ever happens in grappling, right? Those are the three situations you end up in. And so after the first couple of months, I essentially just put together a curriculum where we would do a week of standing, a week of guard, and a week of pinning. And we just rotated through that constantly. And so we would do like, one guard week would be supine guard, the next week would be seated guard, and we would just mix things up. It would be, chest to back pinning 1 week, and then the next time we revisited pinning, it would be chest to chest. And I just kind of tried to like spiral the curriculum. So that's kind of the are you familiar with that concept? So essentially, if you're teaching a large curriculum, you teach kind of the first time through, you just kind of shallowly touch on everything, and then every time that you revisit a topic, you kind of go deeper and deeper and deeper into the details. And so we just that's how we started. And I would say after maybe 2 months, the my primary training partner was able to come up with games on his own. Like, having read none of the research, just having lived and experienced the stuff, he was able to say, well, let's try this game. And then we would, roll for 3 minutes or something. And he'd be like, no, that was wrong. That felt like too much. Let's dial it back to this. And so, like, I'm not even convinced that you need to read any of the research to be able to do this stuff.
Wow. So you can learn eco in an eco way.
Exactly. It's
That
pretty crazy.
is so crazy. I'm so glad we're talking and getting the story out there because this is like, I think this shows the potential and it's a perfect example of like the power of
Yeah.
direct perception, I guess, just
Yep.
perceiving it
Well,
over
and
and interacting with it over and over again.
it leans on, so in ecological dynamics, there's essentially two types of knowledge. So there's direct knowledge, which means you and I are in a situation grappling one another. That's direct knowledge of grappling. And then there's indirect knowledge, which is like, watching an instructional or reading Jiu-Jitsu University or, whatever. And there's a really hard limit on direct knowledge because you can only participate in so many things in any given amount of time, right? But the limit on indirect knowledge is almost non-existent, right? Like, if you want to dedicate your life to studying jujitsu, I'm sure we seem to be similarly analytical people. Like, you can sit down and binge a lot of jujitsu information in a really short amount of time. And so you can leverage that indirect knowledge into functional games that then let you build direct knowledge. So the skill of grappling is not a prerequisite to understanding things well enough to build effective games that can then teach you grappling.
Right. Which is how you guys are able to do it, basically, right?
Yeah, yep. That's essentially how we bootstrapped the whole thing.
Yeah. So you started two guys. You started putting these games together. Now, between practice sessions, would you go and watch a YouTube or an instructional?
Oh,
And
absolutely. Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, it's lots of reading. The Eco Discord is amazing. Like, they were super welcoming. They've been extremely helpful with everything from like coaching books to read on like soft skills and that kind of stuff through to like, hey, post the game and we'll take a look at it and let you know what we would change and stuff like that. Danaher's instructionals are honestly really good because if you watch the first like 20 minutes and you get the core problems or whatever his terminology is, then that's what you look to solve in games, right? So
Right. Yeah, I almost feel like a perfect world is like basically kind of like a reverse classroom and constraint-led approach, ecological approach way, where like in the practice environment, it's all live, it's all representative, it's all carefully curated games for your practice outcome, whatever. But then outside of that, you just have like the perfect list of meta or whatever
I
instructionals to
mean,
then that
you and
inspires your intention for when you're in the game.
absolutely. And have you listened to any of Scott Seafright's stuff from Primal MMA
Oh
and
yes, I
Milwaukee?
have.
Okay, yeah. So one of the really good points that he brought up in one of the interviews that I've listened to, they all kind of blend together now, is that you can't really turn reverse classroom off at this point, right? Like you if you have Instagram or anything like that, you're constantly being bombarded with grappling content, most likely if you like it, right? Like you're watching Danaher shorts on Instagram or like something from Lachlan will come up and you're like, oh, that's sweet, or someone will do some crazy rolling back take and you're like, what was that? It's like, so that's always running. We get that almost for free now, to the point where we have the opposite problem that everyone did years ago, right, where they had to order like a Gracie VHS and beat up each other in their garage because that was the only information. Like, there's so much stuff now that it's always there. You're always taking stuff in that is gonna it's gonna inform your practice, whether you realize it or not, right?
Right. So yeah, you started with that curriculum and then slowly it seemed to grow from there. Who were the next people to join?
So it's really funny, actually, because coworkers. Well, first of all, we actually have a jujitsu club on campus at work, so the timing was just really serendipitous. So there's this guy named Tim Dalby that actually runs Black Dog Jiu-Jitsu in like Oswego, who started a jiu-jitsu club on campus at our job. And so that all kind of just coalesced at the same time. So we would go down and I would talk to Eco, talk to people about Eco just because that's like Eco is the new CrossFit, right? Like I always talk about Eco. And people would be like, hey, what are you guys doing? That looks weird. Like, can you tell me something about it? Or one coworker, seriously, this is not a joke. Work has been pretty stressful for a while now. One coworker just looked absolutely maxed out. And I was like, hey, what are you doing for lunch today? Like, you should come down and strangle someone. You'll feel so much better afterwards. And they showed up and have stuck with it. So
No way.
yeah.
That's
So
amazing.
it's just like
Wow.
word of mouth and that kind of stuff.
Okay, cool. And what were some of the lessons along the way in terms of how you designed the practice and the curriculum? Yeah, how's that evolved since the beginning?
I think initially, well, first off, initially there were a lot of people that said that pre-made games were kind of not valuable and not the point. And I disagree with that. I think that, and I'm actually working on it right now. Like, I think that if there were a 12-week foundations curriculum that you didn't necessarily have to follow, but you could just use, I think that would be super beneficial for a lot of people because, like I just mentioned, you can totally learn a lot. You can intuitively learn a lot of this stuff by participating in an eco program, right? How many people have you talked to that have gone to Greg's room and stayed there for a week and trained and then came home and been like, okay, cool, I know now. Like, I read the books, but now I really know. So I just ignored all of those people because I'm stubborn. I was like, well, whatever, I'm just gonna do it anyway. And So initially, I think I was really lucky because we started after games were kind of a thing in the world. So initially, we were just consuming games that other people who were already experts in the space were producing. Like I mentioned earlier, Greg and others. And then after that, when I first started making original games, I don't know that that's even a real concept, right? Like there's only so many situations in grappling. At first, I was over-constraining games. So I would look for specific solutions or techniques instead of letting people explore more. So do things like we're going to start in X guard and go from there. And I never use jujitsu language. That's another thing. I exclusively try to use language that everyone in the room can understand without any kind of explanation or translation. Which leads to a lot of really weird, quirky explanations that would be way faster if you could just say underhook. But it is what it is. And so I would start in situations like that and kind of be pushing for techniques more than I think now is correct. So now, like one of my favorite things to do is we'll do a guard game where essentially one player is standing, another player is grounded, and they just connect to the standing player however they want. Like connect to their legs and hips, however feels great. Your goal is to put their hands or their hips on the mat. And I don't give them anything. I don't give like no X guard, no reverse De La Hiva, no anything. Just like you have this person standing above you, put them on the ground, figure it out. And most people will end up naturally in some situation that looks like a named guard that we would understand, right?
Right.
But they get there on their own. They don't get there from me telling them, any of that stuff. And I don't necessarily think that looking for specific techniques is wrong so much as it is not ideal, right? So I think as long as you're letting people find solutions on their own, that's the big value. And live resistance, of course. Like that's the elephant in the room. And so yeah, I started really constrained and really kind of narrowly focused, and I've just completely done away with that almost entirely. So like we did today at lunch, actually, we did rear naked chokes and chest to back pinning, and you did nothing. Like you start behind this person, chest to back, cover their hips, and connect your hands however you want. No, like this is what a seatbelt looks like. No, none of that. Just go for it. And people usually will end up in a situation that looks something like we would recognize, like a seatbelt or something like that, right? Because it's a thing because it's effective. Like that, it's not that the solutions people are teaching are ineffective. It's that the way that they're teaching them is less efficient than letting someone actually discover them against live resistance.
Right. There seems to be a skill that you've developed over time, which is the ability to start to create your own games. I feel like I'm like barely there. I'm still using all the games that exist out there. I'm still searching for all the pre-made games. What advice would you have, if you can go back in time to yourself when you first started creating games, like what advice would you have given yourself to take that leap?
I would say th that you should trust the naivety of your own mind. Like it's, I think what trips a lot of people up is that they have so much grappling knowledge that they can tend to lean on that and make things overly constrained, just like I was doing, right? And I don't have a lot of grappling knowledge, at least back then. I have more now, but still not a lot. And so when you say something like, no, just connect to this person however you want, that seems really weird, right? But ultimately, if you were to say, put this person in X guard, that only makes sense to you because you know jujitsu. It doesn't make any sense at all to a normal human.
Right.
So don't think about it too much. Just like keep it simple and like come up with a game and play it and then change it and then play it again and then change it. And so like even now, when I put new games on the site, I have a tagging system where I'll come up with a game and be like, oh, that's super cool. I'll put it up. It'll be tagged as untested. And then we usually will work through it two or three times before it's like, this is good. This is okay for other people to use.
Oh, that's cool. And what's the site called again?
It's slimeoldgrappling.com.
Slimeoldgrappling.com. And can you share with people listening what is it and what does it provide people?
So it's essentially, So I read through all this research and got really excited. And I started trying to talk to people about it. And I realized that it's really unapproachable. Like there's this expectation that someone gain all of this technical knowledge before they can participate. And I don't think that's a really good way to help the community, right? It's just not like, what do you know about water purification?
Nothing.
Nothing. Me either. I'm glad I have clean water though. I'm lucky that's not a requirement. Right. So I was like, man, this is awesome. And all you need is a partner. We need to make this more approachable. It needs to be so that people can just start. And that's kind of what drove the site's development. And so I started put all the games out there because at the time, at least, they were all like YouTube videos and Instagram reels. And to me, it's kind of inconvenient to like get someone together to train and then be like, hold on a second, let me watch this 5-minute video so I can get this game again. Whereas if you just have like a really quick text description, it's like, okay, well, here are my goals, here are your goals. Let's go. Oh no, I forgot. Hold on a second. Okay, there's my win condition. Let's go. It's easier than a video.
Right. It's funny because that's what I've been doing is watching the reels. And it's funny because like some of the reels have three games and I want to play game two, but it's like, oh shoot, we missed that. Then we got to
I
watch the
missed the one
whole
line.
thing. We want to watch the whole thing and watch, get to the second game. We play that second game. So yeah, now, so 2 months in, you kind of switched over, started, training on campus with your buddies. It started to grow. Do you still, you mentioned you still go to gym sometimes?
I do. Yeah, so
Nice.
I still make it out to Impact in Beaverton. They're awesome. They've been super supportive. Like I said, Justin is the guy whose classes I make it to most often. And my first session back after I discovered all this stuff, I was like, dude, I gotta tell you about this crazy stuff that I just found out about. And he was like, yeah, I do that already. Like he hadn't read any of the research, but most of his stuff is still, it had still evolved into that just because it's effective, right? Like if you coach with intentionality, then it's easy to organically work your way into this stuff because it just works, right? And so he was already kind of doing this stuff before I even brought it up. Like he teaches some MMA and striking classes. And he's like, yeah, I love playing games where, you know, only top can throw punches because if you're on bottom, you shouldn't be trying to do anything other than not be on bottom because it's a really terrible situation.
Right.
And so I've been super lucky. They're great. And I go out, like I said, anytime I can. I mostly just haven't made it out because work has been so insane. It's hard to get away.
Gotcha. How has your personal game evolved over time? Like, were there specific things that you wanted to prioritize and focusing on, or did you kind of spread out your focus across those three macro
Well,
situations, or?
so like I said, initially I started in the gi and I started with a really, and this is no one's fault but my own. Like I'm not trying to blame anyone for any of this stuff, right? Like I started in a really traditional, like, here is the positional hierarchy. I want to not be in these positions. I'm going to spend my first 12 months just focusing on defense and not dying. And that wasn't great. I don't know about you, but it's not super enjoyable to only be able to not die. And so I've noticed that because of the way we frame things using the constraint-led approach, I'm much more offensive. Even if it's like I know I'm not going to get a submission out of this, but I can use the threat of it to generate movement, then I it's it like that that was a big game changer for me. Like it's because it was really easy for me to feel kind of like stale and just stuck. Like I'm on bottom. Okay, I'm gonna recover to go to like bottom side control. All right, I'm gonna get the half guard. All right, now I'm gonna go back to side control again. Like I'm not gonna sweep anyone. I don't have any threats, like no offensive tools really, right? And so it just made it made my entire game a lot more dynamic, I think. And that's been really fun. And it often ends up putting me in really terrible situations, right? Like I'm still a white belt, but there's much more movement and a lot more learning than I feel like there was before, where I was so focused on just kind of like, this is framing, do my hip escape or, you know, whatever. There's a lot more options now, and I think that makes it more enjoyable.
Yeah. Are the rest of the people that you train with around the same level? How do you, or in, and how about weight class and stuff like that, or weight differences? How do you switch up partners and skill level?
So our weight range is something like 125 to 250 or something like that. It's really
Dang.
crazy. And so we do a lot of partner variability when we can, just because it depends, right? Like I don't always have a ton of people show up. So if we have three people, then we'll just do like top bottom out. So everyone gets experience with everyone, and then we'll rotate partners in the order so that you mix it up. So I don't really do much partner management, really. That's just kind of a thing that I let the room handle, right? Like sometimes people come in and they're ready for war and they're like, all right, that guy, I know he's gonna give me a really hard time. Or sometimes they're like, nah, I don't want to kill myself today. I just want to learn some stuff. So I just let people sort that on their own. But we do joke that all of the smaller folks are just gonna be nightmares if they ever roll in their weight class, because they're used to rolling with people literally twice their weight sometimes.
And then how do you structure class now? How many different games do you play? How many minutes do you play for? Do you have partners? Do you switch top and bottom when they w hit win conditions? What would a
Yeah, it
class look
depends
like
a
now?
lot on the day. And so we joke in the I think are you active in the Discord,
I'm
the
not
Ego
super
Discord?
active. I do look at
Okay.
it every day, but I just read a little bit. But
It
there's
moves so
so
fast.
much. Yeah.
But kind of one of the running jokes now is that it depends is the answer to everything. So for me, usually there's been kind of a progression. So when we started, everyone's conditioning was kind of garbage. So we did 3 minute rounds because that's what people could survive. And now we've worked up to 10 minute rounds for all games that aren't continuous, 3 minute rounds for continuous games, just so that we can switch. And most games that are 10 minute rounds are switch on win or reset.
The switch on reset is something I just recently started, and I love it because you can immediately try what they just did to you on their next go.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's really good when there's a skill gap, because you try something on them and you can't do it, and then you switch and they do something and you're like, oh, okay, I got you. And then you try that next time and they stop it, and then you're like, okay. So then they try the same thing and then you stop it and just like spirals, and it's really cool to watch.
Yeah, that's the coolest one. Okay, so 10 minutes for non-continuous. I like that. It gives you a lot of time
It
in that
does.
position.
And it also it's kind of unintuitive, but it brings the intensity way down, just because everyone is like, dude, I got to do this for 10 minutes. I'm not going 100% for 10 minutes. This is just not gonna happen for me.
Right, you end up having to pace yourself a bit. Yeah. So how long in total now has it been that you guys have been training on campus?
We almost 3 months regularly, but actually almost 4 months.
Okay, almost 4 months. Are any of the guys thinking about competing?
I don't know. I don't really push that kind of stuff. Like it's
Yeah.
so but the
'Cause that would be fascinating, you know?
it's we yeah, they may at some point, but for me, like I don't really think competition is important. To me and my goals, right? Like I want people to be healthy and happy and enjoying themselves. And if they decide they want to compete, that's cool. But I've like it's cool and I love that people do it. It's just not a priority for me right now, right? Like I think there's so many other positive impacts that grappling can have on people that are way more important. Like that's my primary focus. Like I want to share the physical and psychological benefits with as many people as I can.
No, that's awesome.
I do hope that someone competes though, because I'm curious
I
also.
know, right? I'm so curious to see that, because that would, I mean, obviously it's not a perfect, you know, representation, but
It's a
still,
good way though.
it would be a cool thing, especially when it's like, what gym are you associated with and you just have none, like that would
Right.
be pretty cool.
I do know that so pans are happening right now, and one of the folks in the Eco Discord just had a couple of white belts compete and medal, and I think one of them had been training for less than a year.
Wow,
So
that's
pretty big
cool.
deal. And two of them ended up on the podium. And I think the person that has never that had only trained a year took silver, I believe. So that's like, to me, that's a huge deal. Like that's a big checkbox, right? Like clearly the program is working. if you could
Wow.
take someone from zero to podium in 12 months.
Yeah, that is insane. How often do you guys train? Are you guys training every day or?
Depends.
Because that's a
Between
lot.
one and four times a week,
Okay.
just
Just
depending on work
see who
schedule
wants
and
to
that kind
show
of
up and
stuff.
stuff.
Yeah, usually at least twice a week.
Okay. And then are you when you walk in, are you the one usually saying, hey, this is what we're working in, this is the game, go for it, or do other people bring games sometimes?
So initially when we started out, it was like hey, this is what we're doing, and that was just kind of it. So it was a more static curriculum, but since people have started grappling more, and we also have like an open mat session once a week on campus. So now what happens is a lot of people will go to that open mat and say, hey, I was getting stuck in this position, or someone hit me with this submission and it was really cool and I want to know more about it, or something like that. So now we've reached the point where people feel like they kind of have a map with missing pieces instead of just having a completely blank canvas. So they're able to provide feedback and information to help grow their own game, which has been really fun.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
It reminds me of have you heard of BJJ Meditations, the podcast?
I
Okay.
have. I think I've listened to a few of the episodes. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that podcast a lot. And at their school, they do something called BJJ Labs.
Yeah, actually, I've like binged all of your episodes and heard
Okay.
that, and I was like, man, that is brilliant. I'm gonna steal
Yeah, I was gonna say for
it.
that open mat, that could be a really cool thing to do is pair people up. You come with something that you want to work on, and then you design a game to
Yep.
work on it, and then you just try it. Man, this
Yeah.
is inspiring me tonight to just like, because I have a friend coming over later to train it, and to just be like, all right, tonight only games that we invent and just
Yeah,
start
just go for
messing
it.
around. What is an example of a part of your game that you want to work right now, and what games are you using to work on that skill?
I would say passing butterfly guard. That is really, so at our open mats, we have a really large skill range. So we have from, people in my program that have only ever rolled for 3 or 4 months and only ever with me as a facilitator to, really high level black belts.
Wow.
And so butterfly hooks are kind of one of the situations where I haven't encountered it enough to be competent at all. So I just find myself like, oh, what am I gonna do now? This sucks. It just kind of like flail and I can get through it, but that's definitely what I'm focusing on for right now at least.
Yeah.
And so we do a lot of seated versus standing player games. And we do things like if someone wants to focus on kind of like arm drags from seated, we'll play games where, my goal as a standing player is to put you on your back. Their goal as a seated player is to destabilize me to the mat somehow. And my constraints are I can't touch their feet, right? So I can only connect with my arms to their body. And that constrains me in a way that affords them the opportunity to attach to my upper body and my lower body with their feet to experience what it's like to essentially drag someone to the ground with your body weight and strength, right?
Oh, right. Oh, interesting. So as the seated player, I can't grab their feet.
No, as the seated player, you can grab anything you want. As a
Okay.
standing player, I can't grab your feet. Because, right,
Got it.
what a lot of people would do in that situation is especially if you're a novice, you're going to be sitting too far back and they're just going to walk up and grab both of your feet and flip you over, right?
Right,
And
right.
then you're in side control. Congratulations.
Yeah, so then that way it forces the top player to kind of use their arms as to try to put you on your back, and then that gives the bottom player opportunity to connect to your arms, try to take you.
Yeah,
Interesting.
and that's kind of one of the core concepts of the constraint-led approach is that you constrain the situation to afford someone an opportunity for action so they can develop that skill.
Yes, and that design right there of picking which constraints to afford which things seems to be like the core of that game design. Can you give me a few other examples of different constraints in different games, and then what they afford?
I really like to do regressive games with submissions. So like we may start in a rear naked choke and you'll have the choke completely locked in with your arms and both of your hooks in, and your goal is to just like control me in the situation and maintain that grip, right? Maintain your choke. You don't need to try to finish it. You're just trying to keep me from escaping. And then I just try to escape. And then maybe the next game is we're going to do the exact same game, but now you can only have one hook. You can pick, it can be either hook, you can switch hooks, but you're only allowed to have one at a time. And so I like to do that because it makes it very, very clear how important each connection is, in ways that aren't intuitive, right? And so then one of my favorites actually is we will do a rear naked choke game where it's the exact same. So you're on my back, you have both of your hooks, your choking arm is all the way through, like under my chin, but you're not allowed to use your other hand to finish the choke. So, and your goal is to maintain that position for as long as you can, any way that you can, that doesn't involve you using your supporting hand to finish the choke. And so what that does is people, at least in my experience, when people start to learn a rear naked choke, they kind of wrap you up and hold their head back. And so that helps them realize that if I have this arm in, I can put my head next to yours and kind of jam it against you. And my head is a limb. I can use that as leverage to keep you from escaping. And so then you'll see people start to wrap their arms and tuck their head and face in. And it's just really cool to me to watch that kind of
Dang.
stuff come up.
Wow, that's really cool. Do you tend to like continuous games better than win condition games? And when do you use one versus the other?
It depends on the situation. I really like continuous games for guard a lot. Especially when it comes to kind of like teaching the foundational kind of components of guard. So maybe you're on your back, and a lot of people call this a like a dirty feet game. So you're on your back playing supine guard. I'm standing. Your goal is to keep your feet connected to me, and my goal is to disconnect your feet and get around you. And so it's continuous and it helps you learn to move, which is really hard and alien for a lot of people, right? Like how do I lie on my back but keep my feet pointed at the person that's in front of me? And I think Rob Bernacki actually calls it headlights. Like imagine headlights are projecting from the bottoms of your feet. And if you're playing supine guard, you want to keep your opponent in your headlights. And so we game that a lot because it helps people learn to move. Same thing with seated guard also. Like, you're seated versus standing player, essentially keep them in front of you. Maintain a shin-to-shin connection. Don't let them get behind you, that kind of stuff. And those situations I've seen really big benefits in having continuous games because it's not something you can learn in a moment and reset, right? There's not a clear, like if we played a supine guard game and we reset every time I got around your feet, like you wouldn't spend very much time in the problem space before we were rotating.
Right.
And so one of the ways that I approach games is essentially picking the moment that I want to extend the exposure of, and then essentially choosing the mode of game that allows me to stretch that moment out the most.
Yeah, so
Go ahead.
maybe you can help me out. So one bottom side control. I feel like that is the bane of every freaking white belt in the world. Bottom side control is just such a rough position for me, and I find myself getting stuck there to a point where, like, I kind of mentally give up and just wait for them to try to make space to,
That
yeah.
move.
So maybe we could workshop a little bit. How would you design games to help me with pin escapes from bottom side control?
Let's see. Well, I mean,
I'm putting you on the
it's
spot here.
no, you're good. This is good. What part of it are you struggling with? Like if I'm on top side control and I don't have a near side underhook, what is that like for you?
Yeah, near side under. So what I think my biggest struggle is, like, I can get some my elbow frames usually, but then I can't get my knee in a lot of times. Like, I'll bridge, but then maybe it's their weight. I don't know how they're manipulating it. They seem to predict me decently well, and I can't seem to make enough space to get my knee in and start to get
Yeah,
more of my limbs inside.
so essentially I would start as deep as you can into side control. So like whatever your
No
worst case
frames.
scenario is, no frames, cross face, like you just hate life. And then game that. Like see if you can escape. And like their goal is to just maintain side control, right? Or maybe they can transition to mount or something like that. 'Cause so a lot of times, like you're saying, waiting for movement isn't necessarily good, but taking advantage of movement is absolutely a skill in grappling, right?
Right.
So, if you really want to make it miserable for yourself, you just make their goal to maintain side control. And so you go full in, like crossface everything. You game that for a round, switch, do the, make sure both players get the full experience. And then you take away a tool from the person that's on top. So maybe now they don't get a crossface and you game that. Or, you take away enough tools that you start to progress. And then once you game that a bit, you can figure out how to work that out on your own, right?
Right. Yeah. So let me think. How do I take away their tools? Yeah. No crossface. Maybe no
Maybe
underhooks.
no underhooks. That's another
Yeah.
one. Yeah. Yep.
Maybe you can make them have a win condition of like you only win when you get to mount,
Yeah.
and
Yep.
then that affords those opportunities to take advantage of movement, it seems.
You could also, depending on how you want to build the game, you could make it so that you don't want them to transition to mount. Like if they have to transfer to mount to maintain dominance, that's a loss for them. It just depends on what
Right, that
your
would make
goals
it
are, right?
really hard then
Right.
inside of control.
Or maybe you want to work on escaping out the top instead of the side, so you make it so that they can't grip above your shoulders or head. So then you have that whole like shoulder walk upward direction of travel that you can work on.
Right. Oh, or you could give yourself slowly add more tools for yourself. Like you have one frame in. Okay, you could start with two frames and start with
Yeah,
three with the
absolutely.
knee, and then you can start to bridge those together maybe. Okay. This is helpful.
Absolutely. And
And
there's you there are suboptimal ways to do this, but you're not going to break yourself if you build a bad game. Like
right.
so just like take that like load off your shoulders and just have fun with it. And
Yeah.
that's the big thing. Like just have a good time. If you have a good time and you do it consistently, you'll get better. Like skill
That's
is
so
free
true.
if you just do it over time.
So true. It's so funny because I think just being taught in the traditional way for so long, even in school, everything just, hey, I'm feeding you this thing. This is the right thing. Remember this thing. It's almost it's like poisoned my mind in a way of like, wow, there has to be the
Absolutely.
right way or whatever. Versus it's cool to see people at, I'm just gonna call it the slime mold
Yeah, no, you're
halfling
good.
space,
Yeah.
to see them have none of that preconception and then just go in open-minded. And as long as it's live, then it's way
Yeah, that's
better then.
really well, and the cool thing that no one really talks about is that if you take two people who have no idea what they're doing and they practice together, they make each other get better. Because even if there's no outside influence, right? If we have opposing goals, when I get really good at achieving my goal, to stop that from happening, you have to get better also. And so
Right.
you just kind of climb this ladder together. And it's
So
just
cool.
wild to watch. And like, I'm not saying that there's going to be like, an ADCC champion or anything that comes out of it, but I also think that that doesn't matter. So.
Yeah, and I like that philosophy too. Okay, last question because I don't want to make you late. What is your favorite part about all of this? Like, why do you do it?
It's the fun, honestly. Like it's so for me, the when I started, the psychological benefits of grappling were so strong that I really just felt drawn to share it with people. Like and I'm not saying that grappling is a therapist. If you need mental help that mental health help, go see a professional. But it helps a lot.
Yeah. What did it help with overall mood or
Oh,
situation?
I'm a veteran, so all of the stuff that comes from that, essentially.
Yeah. Wow. Thanks for sharing that. Super
Yeah.
powerful. Super cool what you're doing. I feel like we were just getting into the.
I have an extra 15 minutes if you need it,
Oh, you
so.
do? Okay. Yeah. Let's, are you sure? Okay. Dude, man, I would love to explore more games, just spitballing and stuff like that. For me, I think the guard games are like the hardest ones to make because there's so much variability. I just feel like that position is there's a lot of variability. And so
Absolutely.
one of my things I've been trying to get a lot better at is I find myself stuck in defense a lot and not being able to go offensive and like get to a sweep. I'm just like putting up walls, trying to make them not pass, and then all of a sudden eventually they pass. And so I'm trying to work on the skill of how do I get enough connection to then off balance?
Yeah, start with connections.
Start with
So
some kind of connection.
I think, well, I think it's, I think this might be one of Greg's games, but like you could start. So let's say you start on the ground, seated with two butterfly hooks on your partner already. And then your goal is to off balance them. and their goal is to either escape or, you know, put you on your back and something like that, right?
Right.
And so you start already completely connected, and all you have to do is figure out how you need to work your body to get them onto the mat, essentially, right?
Right. Right.
And you can do that with any type of guard you want to choose. And so there's one of the things that I really like about this kind of approach is that even in situations like guard, where there's a lot of variability, there's very few goals, right? Like if you have someone in your guard, you want to not let them pass and you want to put them on the mat.
Right.
It's two things.
Yeah. Cause I've just been, all the guard games I've been playing have been disconnected.
Yeah. Yeah.
And continuous. And so, okay. So start with any guard, try to put their hips on the mat or their hands on the mat. If they do, it's, that's a win condition. Do you just switch usually?
Yeah. Yeah. So usually the way that I do guard games is if your goal is to destabilize your partner, if you put their hands on the mat, you hold them there as long as you can. If you put their hips on the mat, you reset.
Oh, interesting. Why is that? Is it because with the hands, they can just kind of get back up pretty quickly?
Sometimes? Yeah, they can stand back up, and it also teaches you control, right? So if you can keep someone posted, it gives you a chance to take advantage of posts.
Yeah. And I feel like the next progression is like, there's another skill of like, once you off balance them, can you transition to top position? Because sometimes you just lose it. You get back onto bottom position. So maybe you can start connected. You let them drop you or whatever. And as soon as they hit the ground, the scramble's on, kind of like that wrestling.
Yeah. So it's always,
oh man, that's cool.
For me, at least, I really like the kind of wrestling side of grappling. So, and I just think it's functional, to be honest. Standing up is always a win. So like, if you're on bottom in a, you know, suboptimal position and you can get to seated or your feet, that's usually a win, because that, like, you're not out of danger, but you're in a way better situation than you were, right? And so that's kind of how I think about things. Same thing with guard games, right? Like if your connections aren't strong enough to keep that person connected to you and they can just walk away, then you're not doing it well.
Right. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So maybe we could just keep progressing through the situation. So we start disconnected, then you start connected, see if you can put them down with any connection, and then start from the next progression where as soon as they put them down, can you get on top? If you're on top, you win, something like that. And then now, oh, it almost cycles back to the beginning. It's back to a guard game.
Yeah.
But the positions got reversed.
Yep. Yeah. And so I think it's Kabir actually that has the maintain a connection, use a connection, make a connection. So maybe you start in, I'm going to use grappling terminology just because it's easy and I know you have domain knowledge. Maybe you start in single leg X, completely locked in, like you have all the connections, and your goal is to just maintain that connection and their goal is to escape, right? And that's the first game. And then it's a continuous game, or you can reset when they escape, however, whatever way you want to do it, right? Next game is you have to figure out what to do with that connection. So start at single leg X, how do you put someone's hands or hips on the mat? And then you figure out that chunk of the problem. And then the next game might be, you know, maybe you throw in a different game because it sounds like you're interested in it and it would be fun for you, where you go through a higher level of variability where you start with the connection and your goal is to improve your position. So you want to destabilize their hips or hands, the mat, and then you want to end up in a better position than you started in. So mount, something like that, right? And then you start a little less connected. So maybe you remove, depending on what your skill level is, and this is where all of the like challenge point and adaptability comes in. So you start removing connections in ways that still let you learn skills. So you don't just start lying on your back disconnected, right? Because that's really hard, like to go all the way from totally disconnected to single leg X. That's really difficult for a lot of people. So maybe, you know, you're no longer connected to their hips. You have like half of single leg X and you have to gain that hook over their hips, whatever you want to call it, so that you can control that joint and put them on the mat. And then you just slowly tear away your connections to your partner until you can start disconnected and work your way into single leg X.
Right. This is mind blowing. Just like having someone who's like done it enough. to like just bounce back and forth ideas, it just starts to break down like the possibilities of what you can play with.
Yeah, totally.
And okay, I'm definitely gonna do it tonight.
Yeah,
Literally in like an hour, I'm gonna be like, all right, I'm gonna adjust, I'm messing with these games.
and adjust it, right? Like if you go, so if you do the first couple of games and you start taking connections away and you're like, man, I can't do this. This is too hard. Just go back. It's like you can it's you can do it literally anything you want with your own time, right? And
Right.
that's the great part. Like go back to the point where it's not too hard, and then maybe later that session it will be you can progress, and maybe the next week, it's just don't exceed your challenge point. Like make it so that it's hard enough, but it's not so hard that you're always failing.
Right. And then how about now we get to passing games, because passing is also quite dynamic. So for example, another selfishly question I have is, I tend to pass on my knees a lot and like
Okay.
try pressure passing. I cut through the middle a lot, knee slide, that kind of passing,
Yep.
or going into body lock. But I want to get better at standing passing and loose passing, going around the outside. So one game I thought of for myself is like, it's a very basic game. So top player just try to pass, bottom player try to sweep, but I'm not allowed to step into the middle. That's like my constraint.
Okay.
I have to go around the outside. But I feel like that's a very elementary game. Like there's probably so many more
It's
things that I can
I
do in that game
Yeah, I
or
don't
with that game.
know. I don't necessarily think I would call it elementary or wrong, but so that I think this is another thing that I've stolen from Greg. Actually, yeah, it's definitely Greg. So the concept of segmentation. So essentially, if I'm passing your guard, right? I'm standing, you're on your back, your feet are pointed towards me. The first problem I have to solve is getting past your feet. And I can do that in one of two ways. There's only two options. You can either go to the inside or the outside. So maybe you start with your partner on their back, you're disconnected. Your goal is literally just to pass their feet and get to their calves and then stay there for as long as you can. Inside, outside, doesn't matter. So get past the feet, hold that position for as long as you can. Your partner's trying to recover and always keep their feet in front of you. And then the next game is maybe you go past the knees and it's the same thing. You can pass to the outside or the inside, whichever happens, because you want to maintain that decision making in the moment, right? So if you're presented with open knees, it probably makes sense to try and pass inside. If you're presented with closed knees, maybe you can do some Toreando or some outside movement passing type stuff. And then you just continuously, it's the opposite process, right? You start least connected and then you just advance those connections until you're passing guard.
Yeah, I've played that game before. Stay past the feet, stay past the knees, and just hang out there as long as you can. Maybe I
Yep.
just need to do it more. Probably
Yeah,
what it is.
it absolutely helps. And you can also do like we've started with so player on the ground, passing player has one staple already. So one of their thighs is already pinned to the ground with your kind of knee. And then they want to recover guard, you want to finish the pass, that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, I can even start like halfway into a loose pass position, and then I could try high stepping or whatever, like going into it instead of just
Yeah,
starting completely
totally.
disconnected.
Yep.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Give me just a second.
Yeah, no worries.
Laptop charger issues.
All good.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, so it's the same kind of thing, right? Like you break a solution down into its component parts and then work on the things individually. So you don't want to do it in isolation to the point where it's not representative. Like you don't want to constrain your partner so that they don't have a way to resist. But you also have to make it so that there's enough variability for it to be challenging, but not so much that it's overwhelming, right? Which is
Right.
really easy as novices. Like I still do it all the time where I'm like, I'm gonna do this game. Oh no, this is too much. Like I can't do this at all. I'm never winning. This is not great. And that's fine. Like I have a really high tolerance for failure, so I don't mind getting smashed for an hour, but that's not everyone, right? So you have to adjust that for each individual.
Totally. How about standing? How do you approach the standing position
Oh
with
God, we should have talked about this earlier. I love talking about this. So we actually did standing the whole foundational first few months of our program. And we essentially did it mostly by fighting for position and not finishing takedowns. So maybe you fight for like a rear body lock, and that's a win, right? Or you start with a Russian tie and you want to do like toe tag or maintain the connection, and they want to break it, that kind of stuff. And so everyone enjoyed those games, and we, knock on wood, no one got injured doing stand up. So it worked out okay. And then you can see those skills emerge in other places, right? Because even if you don't start standing, I've seen our people start like on their knees, and they're still doing, like collar tie arm drags and that kind of stuff. Like they're still applying the skills that they learned on their feet, even though we never practiced those things from the knees. We just didn't do that. And they're just able to say, hey, I'm in this situation. Their head is grabbable. So that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, the only standing games I've really done is similar, like trying to get to a front body lock or a rear body lock, and then the other person's just trying to, I think it was a computer's game, trying to maintain inside position with the
That's a good, that's a really good one.
I
I think
really
that's the
like
one he
that
sent
game.
in to have Greg critique,
Yes,
right?
that's right.
It's really good. I like it a lot.
It's the only I've done that one, and then I had a friend who's trying to get better at single leg, so he just snatched a single leg and then he would try to finish. We would just try to stay standing.
Greg has a
Besides
series of
that,
single leg games that are really good also.
oh, he does. Oh, I
Yeah,
haven't seen those.
they're on the site and on the standard Instagram, I think. And it's essentially what you're talking about. Like you start with a single leg, and like at first your goal is to just like move it around and feel what controlling someone by a leg is, and they want to escape and that kind of stuff. So and we also did like toe and knee tag. Those are also really fun. And so then you can start to mix in like a win is a toe tag or a snap down. So then people are like, they shift their body weight backwards to block the toe tag, and then just immediately get snapped down
And the
because
snap
you're.
down win condition is if their hands hit the floor or dang,
And
I
then
don't
most of those games are continuous too, just because it's so quick to reset when you're standing. Like you don't have to do a lot of work to just stand back up.
Man, this is really helpful. I feel like we can talk for hours and hours, and I know you got to get going, but I think the biggest impact this has made on me is like there are whatever possibilities that there are to create games, and just as Kabir says, just fuck around and find out.
Yeah, exactly. That's totally it. And that's what I tell everyone, man. Just start. Just do it. Like, just go do the thing. Like, you can come up with original games. You can use Greg's stuff. You can use our stuff. Just go do the stuff. And you'll figure it out as you go. Just start doing the stuff and don't stop. Those are the two big things.
Yeah, so for anyone listening, if you're inspired by this, I would challenge you in your next open mat, maybe grab a partner that you've been training with and just make come maybe make up a game before so you don't have to on the spot, and then just be like, hey, can we try this game real quick? We got like 5 minutes, and then just try it and see how that feels in your improvement versus open spar after dead drilling. And I think you will be convinced or be surprised. It's so effective.
Absolutely.
But yeah, Trey, thank you so much for your time today. This was super fun. We'll have to catch up again sometime.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Josh.
And we'll link everything in the description, slimemoldgrappling.com, and anything else you want to share, just send it to me later. I'll throw it in there.
Cool.
See ya.
Yep.